Welcome to Junior, Senior and I. We have Marta and Asli today with us. Asli, I'm not going to try to pronounce your name because I would butcher it. So I'll avoid that. Thank you for joining me today. Our subject is continuous learning. But first, could you both introduce yourselves with no more than three sentences? Let's start with Asli.
Okay. I'm Asli. I'm an ex-sound engineer and now web developer. And I don't no more than three sentences. Two is good, right?
Two is good. Two works. Two follows the rules. And I know that for Martin, the challenge will be the opposite, not finding enough things to say, but containing himself. So let's give it a try, Martin.
I was thinking about doing long sentence. I'm Martin. I'm an economist turned developer since now around 20 years. I think doing stuff related to development, close or not depending.
Cool. So let's jump straight in the subject. Our subject today is continuous learning. First off, how do you approach continuous learning, Martin?
It's a big one, and I guess I should not speak too long. For me, I think the most general approach is I put me into a situation of having to do stuff I don't know. So like it has become, initially it was just that I knew nothing, so it was easy to get those situations. But then I think it has become progressively intentional with my career move to big job or even a move to position inside companies that I know I'm not fully skilled to do. Now, it's a bit of a 80-20. You need to be able to do something as you get hired, generally speaking. But it's clearly a part of that has become, okay, that part I don't know, so maybe that's a good opportunity to go there. Now it can be about technology, but it can be about teams. Each team works differently, so it's interesting. A big one is different from a small one and so on. It can be about sectors. It can be about way of working. So it can be very wide. There's a lot of different areas you can learn with. But I guess that's mostly about it has become really about doing. I still learn some blog posts, but mostly it's about, okay, let's try to make it work.
Okay, gotcha. So basically, if I'm paraphrasing correctly, you're trying to put yourself in uncomfortable situations, meaning uncomfort will make you grow/learn.
Yeah, mostly that.
Cool. What about you, Asli?
Well, I've got less 1 year's experience in this area. So I'm where Martin said he used to be, where I know nothing. And so just doing the job in itself is a learning opportunity most of the time. So that's my primary approach. It's not necessarily an active one at the moment because I just come across situations where I need to learn new stuff still quite relatively frequently.
So if I'm getting it correctly, you both basically learn on the job? You don't allocate time or resources outside of work to expand on the body of knowledge you have?
Unless I land on an interesting article out of the blue, but usually it's at work, yeah.
Cool. In that, I'm super different to both of you. I need to, or I always am trying to learn new stuff outside of the workplace, either by reading or by looking up some videos or stuff like that. But yeah, that's an approach that works also of making you uncomfortable.
On that one. So there is no good or bad way.
Of course.
But I'd say, yeah, I'm really in the camp that learning is part of the job. It's needed. If we don't do that, we don't have a job in a couple of years or something like that. And so like in a sort of ideological point of view, I'm always on the idea that this should be part of the work hours. It's easier for me to say, both because I cannot afford it, but also because I cannot afford to learn outside of hours. Why? Stuff, family, kids. Okay. Like I don't have a brain working at 8 or 9 p.m. It's just down. I cannot ask it much more thing. And that's probably due to also just, well, age, something like that. So that's part of the idea of saying, okay, I want that to be in my 40 hours. I like the idea that it should. No, yeah.
I see. And Asli, do you think it should be the responsibility of your employer to give you time to learn on the job? Or should it be the personal responsibility of the employee, to say it that way?
I mean, if I need information or need knowledge to be able to do the job, then it's unrealistic for the employee, I think, to expect for me not to put my work hours into the learning, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm also a junior, so it's a given that I'm still learning. And I think if it's a requirement that I know certain things in order to do the job, it's unreasonable to expect me to put in hours outside of the job to be able to do the job.
Makes sense. I think I'm disagreeing with you both. I do believe there is a, there is a part of the employer that has to give you that room and that time to learn. But especially for us that are starting, it's also our responsibility to manage where we want to our career to grow. And it might be in a different direction than what our employer wants. And that's not on work hours, right?
That's fair. I think that's also at this stage still slightly beyond my scope because, again, I'm at that point where I don't even know what the possible career path directions are truly. And it's only by picking up bits and as I'm going along that I'll get a better idea. And then maybe once I have a better idea, I can invest in taking a certain direction that might not be the one my current job requires me to go down. And then, yes, I'd be in line with you.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, cool. Very interesting. And what types of supports work best for both of you? Let's start with Asli. Is it more video, blogs, documentation, trying stuff?
So far, my primary source of information is documentation, learning from audio generally. I don't even like audiobooks, so because I don't remember what I listen to.
Okay.
So yeah, written formats are usually the ideal for me. And then in real time, trying out things to figure out how it works in practice.
Okay. Could I know more about what approach do you use when you try to figure out stuff with the code? Are you deciding, okay, this should work this way, I'm going to try until it works? Are you writing a test first and making it pass? Is it just, okay, let's try stuff and see what happens?
So there's definitely not as much test-driven development going on as I would like in my current state.
The heresy.
Heresy from Pablo, I know. But I don't always work with specific tests. It's more of a sort of trial and error. Like, I think this should be doing this. Let me check what's happening at this point and things like that. And reverse engineer things.
Gotcha. And you, Martin, what types of supports do you prefer? What type of learning do you prefer?
So I'm part of a very select group and sect called People Against Video for Learning on the Internet. Like, I think video for learning is super good. For example, when I had to find why my clothes washer was not working properly, because having the video that show where it is extremely useful when you have the object facing you. But for coding stuff, it's something I really don't understand, because I always feel the written format is just objectively better. What I mean by that is, first of all, I read faster than I can listen, even when I can change the speed. I can go back to something, I can search, I can jump to the paragraph where the people said about all the experience, which I don't give a shit about, instead to get to the answer. So yeah, I don't get it. I understand there's a big audience for that. So I understand I'm probably in the minority, but it's not only I have a personal preference against it, is that I don't understand how this can even work. Like, it, how to jump in a video, like, it's much less navigable. You cannot really get the big picture. Which I can do by scanning, I guess, so it's a lot of text for me. And generally also is jump to the solution. Like, I want to see code mostly, and try them out, in my own environment or have a look of that. And I'll get about how it works that way after. I'm always joking that I'm normally paid for solution, not for explanation. I want the explanation, obviously, but it doesn't make sense until it works. Yeah, it's no point about understanding how a code could work if in the end it's not solving the problem. So it's always, finding a way that's solved. And then, I can reverse engineer why it's actually doing that. But so back to the initial question, a lot of text and generally more example more like I like people making long document explaining about how something works in the tiny detail using English.
Okay.
But generally, I'm much more practical in my search. Like, I want to make whatever is there working.
Yeah, sure. And I'm guessing to the omnipresent topic of AI, that helps you there as well, because it will give you suggestions of, okay, practically this might work. I can just copy paste it, right? And I might learn because of that.
So for me, Copilot is something that I think it's the easiest $20 to spend as a freelance.
Mm.
Like yes and no, because then I realize I'm paid by the hours, so I don't get really a financial benefit of being more efficient. it's a different topic. And I read as autocomplete. And indeed, but this is less about learning for me. Copilot is more into the do something correctly immediately that I would have spent 1 or 2 minutes thinking about.
Okay.
And so it's more about speed. It's very rare that it generates something I don't see coming. And I don't use AI yet for more high-level thinking. Like, I'm not asking Copilot about how I need to remodel this, how can I approach that. I never tried. I think it worked, but I never tried. So for me, it's a sort of just a better autocomplete. Like, it never failed to know that on inject, the accumulator is first and the variable is after, which is something I have no way to remember even after after 20 times. Like, it makes small loops very efficiently. Without having to think, and it's one less thing to think about, so it's cool. But it's not really problem solving for me at this time.
Okay. Yeah, I got it. So basically, yeah, it's quote unquote, it allows you to type faster, not to learn more.
Mostly, yes. No, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was saying sometimes it's a small thing about syntax or a nifty method I didn't know about. Like, I managed to, yesterday I had a solution in Python where I just realized that you could generate a dictionary and if some kind of variable of expression as a key, it's not something I realize that you take the output of the expression and making the key and then made something that was 4 lines of code 1. So it's a bit too much smart code, but it was beautiful and there I learned something. But it's a visual. Okay. And at least indeed, it's more about speed.
Mm. Gotcha. Ashley, you were going to...
I was going to say, with regards to AI in the context of learning, I think I fundamentally disagree with it.
Okay.
Just because... I think that in my approach, I think you can never learn as deeply if you've got AI explaining what's happening to you all the way through than if you're learning by yourself. It's kind of similar to like I remember, I don't know, in primary school, there was a kid who had a hard time with some of the concepts in math or something. And the kid had a tendency of like getting help from other students. And the teacher was like, no, don't help them because otherwise they won't learn how to figure it out. If you just give them the answer, you know, it's similar. I think it's a similar principle of like, I think AI is a great tool, but I am wary of it to an extent, just because I know that at least personally, if I don't go through the struggle of maybe it's this, maybe it's that, and then finally finding out what it was, I won't even remember the solution as well. I won't even remember why it like the, you know, if it comes up again in the future, I might not immediately think of what had happened in the past if I got help figuring it out.
Mm. And does that, taking a step back in that, does that also apply when you ask questions at work to someone who has more experience? Do you try to avoid asking those questions for as long as possible? Or is it different if it's a person explaining it to you?
I do try to avoid asking questions in person as well.
Okay.
I think there's a balance, obviously. I think sometimes I can tell if I'm missing something a bit silly or like minor that's getting in my way, and then I might ask a question. But most of the time, I am very like, I try and exhaust my list of possibilities because I have theories as to why it's not working, and I want to at least exhaust the thoughts I've come up with first before asking for help.
Okay, makes sense. I saw Martin have a big reaction when you said you don't ask questions, but I think that last sentence might have assuaged his fears.
No, when I'm laughing, it doesn't mean I'm laughing at you, but I find it interesting. No, I don't like to find solutions on the internet, and I don't like to ask people for help. And I say, okay, where I get totally is that I like when you said I want to expand things, but also on my side, and it's both personal, it's something I advise junior people when I work with them, is I put a clock at some point. If I spend 2 hours on a problem and I'm still where I was, that means that I've exhausted the reasonable chance I'm going to solve it in a reasonable time, which means at the time I need to change my strategy. Changing strategy can be asking colleague. It can be get out of the computer and go walk for 15 minutes. And some point that works as well. So it doesn't mean asking for help. But indeed, I like the idea that at some point, yes, I said, you need to change the plan. If I'm banging my head about something, 2 hours is a big maximum about, one way or another, I need to change the way I'm approaching that because it's not going well. No, generally problem in software are like one problem in one problem in one problem. So it's not like a single thing that doesn't work. But indeed, I'm pretty much into the asking a colleague for, generally it's more like, I have something here, can you have a look with me? Mostly because like when you say with rubber ducks and things like that, generally the process of explaining and having a second pair of eyes helps a lot. And it doesn't mean the person need to be better than me. Actually, it just need to be someone that can code. That's my only two concern about that, and that's enough. No, the fact is when I think about it, I'm more and more solving some things myself too. But I was guessing it was due to the fact that I'm generally, and not just an age factor, I'm generally one of the most experienced people in the teams I'm in. That's more and more. It's like, I don't know for you, but the people are younger and younger in the company that I'm working with. I don't know what's linked to that. Younger and younger. It's more like that I know that at some point I'm in a dead end and I need to find a way out. And it's always the time. It's always like, maybe what I'm doing is going to get the solution, but I cannot expend the day on that. I can't afford that general.
Yeah, that's a good point, the balance between the time spent as well. That's usually where I, as you said, switch strategies. If I feel like I've spent too much time on this for something that I feel like I should have fixed this by now and I haven't managed on my own, okay, now let's see for external input, someone else's help.
And you gave me a huge segue to the next thing I wanted to ask about external input. One reason that I've seen advanced for having code reviews and pull requests and stuff like that is that it allows people on the team to learn. What are your feelings about that? I don't know if someone wants to go first.
Just because I don't think I have too much to say about this, I don't think I've ever reviewed necessarily one of my colleagues' code. Sometimes I'll go into it because I've noticed they've changed something. I'm curious about it, and then I go check that out. But otherwise, I don't. My code gets reviewed, but I don't review other people's code. So.
Okay, I'll put a pin to that whilst we hear Martin's response because I want to come back to being the reviewee as well. But Martin, how do you feel about code reviews for learning?
So as with many things, I used to be pretty much an extremist on that area. I wanted every single line of code to be reviewed wherever I was, with generally the idea that it's an activity you do not to improve the code. It's an activity we do to improve the code. And both the reviewer and the reviewee, because that's very important. My philosophy of code review is that it's a conversation. I like to say it's not a grading exercise. So it should be, yes, of course, maybe you have someone more senior reviewing the work of someone more junior, but the opposite is good too. I often tell junior colleague, if you see my code and say something you don't understand, it doesn't mean you're stupid. It may mean that the way I've coded that it's not clear. And I'm supposed to code in a clear way because I'm supposed to have the skills to do that. So that's maybe the thing is, with time, I'm less sure of that. I still like to have opinions on things. And I still think that you need to read code from other people if you want to grow, because else you're too much stuck in your own way of working. I need that because it opens my ideas about, oh, that's interesting. You know, the moment you see some code and you see, and the first reaction is, I wouldn't have done that like that. And generally it's a bit like negative. And then it's a step back saying, first of all, that's not an interesting opinion. That's not factual. That's like, you're a different person, you do something differently. It doesn't make it good or bad. And then it's about all the time, even if I think my approach is better, at least I've seen a different one, and one I wouldn't have thought about myself. And maybe I don't want to use it. and maybe even I'll find a reason and an objective one and not just either time. But so the back to the main question is about, I think I'd like review for the conversation, but I think the key element is, are you reading code that someone else is writing? And I think that's important. In a fun way, it's what Stephen King said to other people that wanted to become a writer. And they said, well, what do we need to do that? And he said something such as, write a lot, read a lot. And that's pretty much it. Because you cannot learn to be a writer. How do you do that? By writing. Okay. And you cannot really write in your own corner because you need to read other stuff, not to copy, but to expand your perspective. And I think it's the same with code. It's interesting to see other people one, whether it's for review or not. Maybe yes, maybe not. I still like the exercise. I find it funny, but it's complicated to find a good way between fixing important stuff, having good conversation, and nitpicking. And it's not easy to find a good. I find it more and more complicated. Well, I used to be very sure of myself on that one.
Yeah, I see that. I think I am in agreement with you that seeing code is the most important part, other than like the review, which you might get some defects and whatever. But also, and that's where I wanted to come back to being the reviewee, having someone else tell you, okay, this part was not clear, not you made a typo here, but this part was not clear, or I would have done it this way, might also help in the reading code part of things. Do you have those kinds of interactions, Ashley, where being the reviewee allows you to unlock something or to learn something, or is it something that you have not encountered yet?
I'm not certain I can say that for sure, primarily because I also don't think I have my style of coding yet. I'm still, to be fair, I think most of the time I'm copying the style of what's already in the code base. There's like, so, but I don't know, maybe I do write things that are not written exactly entirely as expected. And if that's the case, at least it's not been brought to my attention often enough that I remember.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay. I'm going to keep on the subject of external input, because at the end of the day, learning is external input. I'm going to guess the answer of Martin's to this question is yes. Ashley, I don't know. Have you done peer programming, and has that helped you learn?
I have done peer programming, but it's always been it's usually for smaller things.
Okay.
So I don't know if I can say that it's helped me learn much necessarily, but it's definitely, I find it efficient to have two people. I mean, usually with me, it's two people when we're peer programming. I have found it like more efficient. I feel like things get solved quicker.
Okay.
Usually in those
cases. Okay, enough. My answer is no. I didn't really do that. Well, I had a very occasional situation where we had two facing the keyboard, but as an intentional activity, maybe a couple of times, but like less than 10. And it has been a while. I think I'm curious about the practice. Especially I would be curious to get in a team where people are used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it, maybe the XP side, I think they... My feeling is that they have things right, and my feeling also is I will find that very uncomfortable. Not because people will judge me, because maybe and they can, and it's okay. And as a friend of mine say, I am not my code, so it's okay to criticize my code, and I need to distance myself from that. But mostly because like everyone, I guess I feel my thinking process and solving process is something quite convoluted. That sometimes it's linked to staring at the screen, like in a weird way, and then looking back, and then generally finding the tool because it helps me to trigger. And so I'll be curious and a bit, afraid's a big word, but like, about, okay, you need to synchronize a bit your way of thinking and of approach, and I don't feel that's going to be easy. Now, to be honest, I'll be curious, but I'm not proficient enough in the technique, so I don't feel myself bringing that to a team.
Mm-hmm.
And I never went into a team where it was, I never saw a team where it was a regular part of their process.
Okay. At Recover, where I'm working now, it's not fully regular, but I'd say that at least once or twice a week, I have a peer programming session with someone on the team. And I do see what you mean, that some tasks are too convoluted to be on pre-programming if you're in full exploratory mode, or if you are just doing something tedious, pre-programming won't help you either learn or unlock stuff. But for normal work, let's say it like that, I find that it has helped me see even the fact of explaining, okay, this is what I'm thinking, this is my thinking process, what is your thinking process, has helped me unlock things of, oh, that's a fun way to think about it, I'll remember it later, or even just, okay, you're doing the loop this way, you know there is an accumulator function or whatever, and our knowledge of the database and the code is not the same, and it is a bit uncomfortable, and I think it has to be done well, mostly with time limits. But I found it really helpful to grow. So I would recommend it. Voila. I think we have exhausted my questions. I don't know if there is something you were expecting me to ask about that I didn't.
No.
The comfortable part of coming somewhere and I just have to answer questions. So that looks relatively easy where you do the hard work, because having opinions for me at minimum is not something that requires a lot of energy. Like I have opinion on everything. So that's a bit the issue. No, I think it's interesting the learning part. The only thing there is that whatever the way is that we are really into a profession where you cannot stop. Never. Like it has been 25 years. I'm still learning new stuff. Pretty much every day. At some point, I try to open a file. Or say, today, I learned where just not small things. Huh? Oh, there is a lib that does that. Or there, and I could have something each day if I'm regular with that. I never get disciplined. But and I really think it's important. Yeah, because it's so much to do. It's so much, and also that you can. It opens option on a career. And I think it's really important. And where I'm back with you too about who is responsible for the learning is that ideologically, I think the company should allocate time for that. And I'm always going to advocate for that inside companies. But I agree that in the end, it's your own responsibility. And the person that didn't learn anything for the 10 last year shouldn't point that to the company. If the company is bad, leave the company. Like that's where you have a personal responsibility at the end. And I also agree with Sassy that it's doubly true for juniors. Well, if you don't spend time, but also because if you don't put time to help junior learn, you're doing something stupid as a company. Because the value is because the person learned. I've been a hiring manager several times. There is not a single situation where the economics makes sense if you suppose you hire someone junior with the assumption they're going to keep at that level. If that's the assumption, don't hire the person, because it's just losing money and time and frustration and whatever. So it's always the idea, and generally it's what happened, that you have a learning curve and that people are going to get better and then they leave when they're good. But well, anyway. that was an interesting exercise, to be honest.
Expanding on that, you just made me create a question. I agree completely that, yes, a company expecting a junior to remain at the same level and not giving them room to grow is just bad economics, because you're hiring someone for their potential, not for where they are today. But I think that applies to juniors, mediors, and seniors. Do you think that, or have you seen company plans of growth for developers that have worked? Asli, does your company have one? Or is there some structure to that? Martin, have you seen some? I'm going to start with Asli.
Wait, so what's the question exactly?
Right. Does your company have or your manager have a plan for your growth as a developer in the company? Or is it something you're figuring out day by day?
I'm not sure. I think probably should have mentioned this in the introduction. I'm in quite a small company, like small startup. So I think they're also still figuring it out. You know?
Sure.
I do get the impression that they have certain aspirations for my growth, but I don't know if they have a clear, like, set path for that to be achieved. But I think we're both like figuring it out together, and that's kind of the situation.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Martin, have you been in a company where there was a plan, or is it usually something you have in your mind and try to teach according to that plan that you have vaguely in your mind?
So, yeah, as a colleague, I never had a company having something planned for me. Like I did advocate when I wanted to go to conference, I had to, well, sell it to the company saying that's the reason why it's a benefit for you. So generally, it wasn't a plan. No, I never worked for a really technological company. So it was generally managed by HR people that were not really understanding what we were doing. So it was a bit complicated. But it was an occasion of frustration for me saying, okay, you should invest in us and that shouldn't be, but we're open to proposal. I would expect something more than open to proposal. Like I've expected a more active role, which I never found anywhere. On what I put in place, for me, it's generally, it's not a standardized training. It's more space for senior people take time to coach. And so it's a bit of mentoring, and it generally leaving relatively junior people tackle big things. The general thing I really like is you can put a junior person on a very important task. The only task you can put them is an urgent one.
Yeah.
Because if you have the process and the time, they will figure it out with the help of the team. No, what you can say is that we have something there and I'm sorry, it's for Monday. No, okay, this one I'll keep, or I'll give to someone more experienced, because while you're more at ease about where are you going to get there, and also because generally you're more at ease with coping with stress. And that's an important thing. And that's not kind of thing I want to throw at someone which is learning, because then it's adding stress to stress, stress about the learning, stress about the deadline. Yeah, okay, no, it's okay, we're going to figure it out. But so it's more about giving them potentialities and feature to work on that they are technically speaking not capable of yet. That's the whole point.
Mm.
But so that you can, if the, no, it's always a staircase. And like, is that one maybe a bit big of so on? Someone you realize, okay, I'm sorry, I gave you something and I know you wanted it, but it was just not reasonable. Like the step was too bad, was too big. Okay, I'm sorry, we figure it out. We work it together or something like that. But so that's more the kind of thing that I'm doing, that having an exact plan. Now, again, same thing with us. I'm working in small environment. I cannot tell my junior colleague what she's going to do in 6 months. I have no idea.
Sure.
No one knows. It's complicated to explain with.
To be fair, it's not something I've seen done either, or I have done either in the past. It was more I'm trying to figure it out along the person I'm mentoring or coaching or whatever. Okay, well, cool. Thank you both very much for your time. I think we can end the podcast here.